Where you are in the world. How's the volume? Is the volume okay? So we'll start again this afternoon with a sitting. And the theme for the sitting is allowing. That came up this morning, so I would weave that into the meditation this afternoon. Connecting to the body, arriving, being with your experience, and exploring the possibility of relaxation. Allowing the body to relax. As a retreat goes on, I find I can do this in a little bit kind of a less formal way, just checking in, opening to the body, and inviting relaxation. Sometimes using that request, may the body relax. Sometimes it just comes almost through a memory of relaxation, that memory informing the present moment, inviting more relaxation. And I do usually find it useful to consciously check in the interior of the body, seeing if there can be a softening inside the throat. Relaxation around the heart. The softening in the stomach and the intestines. Maybe too, the mind can relax. There can be a release of ways the mind is caught up in thoughts of past or future. And opening to recognizing the awareness that's aware of this relaxation, whatever relaxation is available. And Is there awareness? And as you notice awareness, opening to what is obvious, letting go of the conscious exploration of relaxation, and opening to receive whatever is already available. Relax. Are you aware? What is obvious? As we explore opening to just what's here, this, just this, that is supporting this attitude or holding of experience with allowing. Whatever is arising, whatever's here, awareness can meet it, welcomes it in a way. Everything is allowed. In this very moment, opening to the fullness of our experience. Witnessing, being with ourselves. A very deep human wish is to be seen. To be accepted for who we are. We want to belong. This practice of opening to just whatever's here. We are seeing ourselves more fully than anybody else can, allowing ourselves to be as we are, as it is. The experience of this can be one of deep connection with ourselves, a feeling of belonging to ourselves. Are you aware? What is here? What is already here? Allowing. Allowing what has come to be known, to be taken in, to be received. Through this practice, we learn not to reject or fear any part of ourselves, but to hold it in this safe container of awareness. Container that can hold all parts of ourselves. Learn from, be with, and ultimately transform. Not because we try to do something with it, but because this being with, allowing experience to be as it is, supports the deep development of wisdom and understanding. Are you aware? What's here? Receive and allow. And if there's resistance to something, maybe the container can get a little bigger. Maybe the resistance can be allowed to. Nothing is outside of the terrain of our mindfulness. Awareness can meet whatever arises. If we found someone, a friend or someone who was willing to be fully present with us, not judge us, not reject or deny what is happening for us, but just was fully present for us, we would probably feel that as very healing. We would feel that as love. And so this is what I was speaking to this morning about that presence for ourselves. This wisdom presence that we're talking about, this non-reactive, non-judgmental presence. It's essentially one of the most kind and loving things that we can do for ourselves. So I just thought I'd go through some of the questions that had been submitted. There were some this morning in the chat box, and do some of this afternoon with some questions. So several of them about thoughts, thinking, that kind of thing. So I'll do these together in a group. So the first one, I find that when I relax during meditation, I often fall asleep or get into a visually dreamy state. How to attend to that? And that is, I mentioned, sometimes the mind, when it kind of relaxes or it feels like it goes into a drifty state, that we get lost with that. And that if we can become aware, like wake up and notice that experience as we're waking up. So that's the first thing to recognize, is the moment you wake up in that space, there'll be like remnants of that quality of the mind. The dreaminess, the driftiness, the spaciousness, and the pleasantness will probably be there. And so connecting with that as the mindfulness returns, you get a taste or a flavor of what it means to be aware in that state or of that state. And you may be able to start to kind of see the mind moving in that direction. So the I'll give another example from my own practice. It's almost like a spacing out kind of state you're describing, a dreamy or a hypnagogic kind of state, often very pleasant, very relaxed. And I said actually the other day, I think I said that sometimes the mind, as it relaxes, kind of moves into that state. It's almost like the mind and body know how to relax, only they don't know how to let mindfulness go with it. So it's kind of like when mindfulness arises, we're just like letting mindfulness get the education of how to be with that, how to be aware within that state. So one of the ways is noticing as you wake up into it, you know, noticing that quality of what that kind of spacious, pleasant quality is. And again, it's got a diffuse quality. I've been mentioning diffuseness on and off here during the week. It's a mind that's not, you know, it's not a state that you can kind of like say, oh yeah, that's what that is. It's kind of got a more diffuse quality to it. Maybe have a foggy quality to it or a fuzzy quality to it. And so it's not a precise thing that you can kind of go, oh yeah, I know the shape of that. That's frustration or that's anger or that's impatience. It's the relaxed mind feels like it's spread out. So our minds know how to meet these diffuse experiences. I mentioned earlier today kind of the feeling, or maybe it was yesterday, the kind of sense of humidity. If you walk into humidity, it's like that's a diffuse experience. You don't know humidity because of one specific spot on your skin. It's the whole complex of several senses together. It's the feeling of the air in the skin, a little bit of what it feels like as you're breathing it in. something of the way it smells. It's kind of a broad experience. And then there's, you know, if you have a clear night, which we're not having here in the Bay Area these days, but if you have a clear and moonless night where you're not too close to light pollution, if you go out, you might see the Milky Way at night. You know, I'm looking at the stars at night, looking at the sky at night. You could focus in on particular places on the Milky Way. Maybe I mentioned this the other day, noticing like the constellation Cygnus, the swan, right in the Milky Way. You can pick out the individual stars of Cygnus in the Milky Way. You can look at those stars. So that's the kind of more kind of aiming or focusing kind of a precise experience. You're knowing something very clear and precise. But the Milky Way, you know, is like, it's just vast. To really appreciate it, you kind of have to relax and just take it in. It's not a precise experience. And so even in the visual field, we can take in these vague or vast or broad experiences. In our mind states, you know, certain things like a thought is pretty precise often. Certain emotions can be very clear. They have kind of almost a shape to them. Anger, self-hatred for me was pretty clear. It's like, yep, that's that feeling. But, you know, spaciness, much more diffuse, soft kind of. So familiarity with that as you wake up into those states, and it's like, rather than having the idea of what am I supposed to be paying attention to, we often in our mindfulness think we're supposed to know something precisely or concretely. Give yourself the chance to know this diffuseness if you're waking up into something like a dreamlike state. And then you can also play with noticing, sometimes you can notice the moments when it feels like there's some more or less mindful places, you know, like you're aware of experience. There's some clarity perhaps, or there's some understanding, a real sense of being fully present for what's here. And then it kind of feels like the mind just kind of lets go a little bit. There's still some awareness, but it kind of feels like it just kind of goes, it kind of collapses or something like that. That might be a place where the mind is starting to go into one of those places. And you don't have to try to pull it back, but see, can the awareness kind of be curious about that? So an example of this, you know, this happened in one retreat where I was doing a focused meditation practice. So it was a little bit more clear, the distinction between a focused experience and when the mind kind of let go of that. But I was noticing the breath, really attending to the breath and right with the sensations. And then I began noticing that I felt like this kind of little pull or a kind of a drift away from the breath. I felt the mind kind of go, ooh, you know, kind of like softening and getting like fuzzy around the edges. And when I first started noticing that, my tendency was, oh, come back to the breath, sharpen it up, make it clear, know what you're paying attention to. So there was that movement. And then I would feel it kind of go, kind of collapse again, or feel like it was starting to want, what it felt like it was it felt like it was starting to wander. It was letting go of this object that I was paying attention to. It was letting go of this object. And my agenda was, oh, come back. And I did that several times. But then at some point I got interested in the fact that my mind was aware that it was letting go of that object. There was awareness there. And instead of deciding, well, let me come back to the breath, I was like, well, let's see where it's going. Let's see what happens. And it entered into one of these vast, diffuse spaces. It kind of startled me because that was one of the first times I'd really been aware in entering into a state like that. And then that popped me out of it. He's like, whoa, what was that? But there was that kind of sense of the mind letting go and moving into this kind of diffuse space and just willing to, because I knew I was aware, let's just see what it's doing. Let's just see what's happening there. So these are some ways to explore around the edges of this kind of dreamy state. And I'd say in general, this kind of exploration is useful for the wandering mind. Noticing when you come back, what's present as you come back, will give you a little bit of a hint as to what was happening before. And you might also begin to notice kind of where it's leaving, you know, where it's orienting to something new, shifting to a new experience. And so we can kind of explore the edges around where the mind typically wanders. And another question on the other side of pleasant thoughts is how to work with addictive pleasurable thoughts. This kind of thought includes delusions of grandeur, career success, or sense desires. They feel much different than aversive thoughts, despite also having a sticky quality. I'm worried that noticing the pleasure is an unskillful way of working with them, as they may be encouraged to continue. And so in this last one with the dreamlike state, you know, I was encouraging noticing when you wake up into it that there is a pleasant quality. In the addictive pleasant thoughts, usually the pleasantness is kind of more about kind of an idea, or so it's the mind is attaching to some kind of an idea and finding the idea pleasant. It's not anything about the present moment state exactly that's pleasant, although it can create pleasurable feelings in the present moment. What the mind is hooking to, those thoughts that it's hooking to, are not usually about the present moment. They're about something, a fantasy in the future, something that hasn't happened yet, or something we wish would happen. So attending to the pleasure of that is just encouraging the mind, the greedy mind, to kind of stay with it. So I would not encourage noticing the pleasantness there, because there you're kind of picking up on the pleasure of the sense desire and attending to that, which would just encourage the greed. What I'd encourage in that kind of a situation is when you notice it, if you want to play with, you know, the experience itself, I would encourage noticing the desire, noticing the pull. We don't usually actually notice the experience of desire itself. We are so in the desire that the desire, the delusion of desire, kind of the delusion that's embedded in desire, is if I get that thing, I'll be happy. If that came true, that would be fantastic. And so when the mind is hooked in that desire mode, believing that view, it doesn't notice what the desire actually feels like. It's thoroughly deluded by the view of desire, which obscures the experience of desire itself. And so if we turn to, well, what does it feel like to be wanting something? Wanting something, if you actually look at that experience, that's where it's sticky. That's actually where the feeling of wanting is actually unpleasant when we look at it. When we look at the actual experience of wanting, as soon as there's a moment of wanting, as soon as wanting springs up, it's in kind of counterpoise to something that it wants. And in that, there's wanting and something I want, there's a recognition of lack. I don't have that thing. And the wanting has that quality of lack. And so the feeling of wanting itself is not pleasant. It's kind of got a sticky quality, an off-kilter quality. It's not satisfied with what's here, because it's got the idea that something else is going to make it happy. So that feeling of dissatisfaction that wanting has kind of deluded us into not feeling, if we open to that with mindfulness, our mind gets a different kind of education around that whole experience of wanting. It begins to understand it as not conducive towards deeper well-being. It recognizes that it's already kind of off kilter. It's already kind of constricted. And so in that kind of a situation, I'd encourage you to turn towards the desire, the wanting. Not what you want. It's like, take the attention out of the thing you want, that pleasant thing. Let the attention come back to the experience. What does it feel like a human being that wants this thing? What does it feel like a human being that's dissatisfied about not having that thing? Now, if that's hard, which it can be, the mind might just want to go back and the delusion and the wanting can be strong enough to say, oh, it's not that big a deal. You know, we can play with this right now. You know, just, we don't want to look at the wanting. You know, if the mind is doing that, then you might see if you can like set down the whole thing. If the wanting is too sticky to be mindful of, if it kind of just catches you right back into the wanting, then that might be time to open your eyes, for instance. Often these kinds of things you're talking about, the pleasurable thoughts, often they're happening when our eyes are closed. And so opening the eyes is a great way to kind of help those thoughts diminish. And just orient to what's here in this moment, you know, using perhaps the visual field of what's in the room to help you to come back to some balance of not being caught by that wanting. I've found the exploration of wanting to be amazingly freeing. You know, this is the key. This is the Buddha talked about noticing craving. You know, he said, this is when we understand suffering, we'll see that craving's in there. And as we understand that craving, as we see it, as we experience the craving itself, the mind starts to let go of it. And so you might notice at times, if you turn towards the wanting and explore, well, what does this wanting feel like? You might notice at times when it kind of lets go. That experience in one of my retreats, I was watching the wanting around wanting to look at people. This was a 3-month course, and it was like 3 months of looking at people's shoes, and I was really wanting to look at people's faces, but I was following the rules. You know, I was not looking at people, and I would see somebody in my peripheral vision, and there'd be this strong urge, just like, oh, I'm not going to look at them. I'm not going to look at them. But there was this strong urge, but I was just forcing myself not to look at them. So I wasn't really seeing the wanting. I was repressing the wanting. But after, you know, some days of this, I finally kind of got it. It's like, oh, the wanting is happening. I should watch the wanting. And I began exploring that. I'd feel the pull. I'd feel the urge, that sense of, yeah, I'm not going to be okay unless I look at this person. I mean, it's amazing. Wanting will tell us, you know, we're not going to be a complete human being unless we have that piece of chocolate or look at that person. You know, it's like the delusion of wanting is completely indiscriminate about what it wants. And so feeling that sense of, I'm not going to be okay unless I get to look at this person, that strong urge, and feeling the kind of pull to it, the constriction around it. And then I noticed that as the person kind of, you know, I wasn't looking at them, but as the person kind of moved into a place where it would be very easy to look at them, The wanting got even stronger, but I kept just watching, and then saw the person kind of go into the building. And just as they vanished into the door, it's like in that moment, there was not the urge, the wanting really realized, you know, this is not a life or death situation. You know, I don't have to follow the person to find out who it was. As soon as they disappeared, the wanting disappeared. And it felt like I was released from a vice grip. The freedom in that moment, the release from the suffering in that moment, the release from the wanting, that was a huge learning. It was such an eye-opening experience that made me respect the power of wanting, how strong it is, and how delusive it is. And how, you know, as that wanting vanished, it's like it was clear that you know, it was completely a deluded idea that I had to look at that person in order to be happy. As the wanting vanished, the mind realized, yeah, that was just a complete fabrication. Did not need to happen. So looking at the wanting when it's arising, this is right at the center of the eightfold, of the Four Noble Truths, noticing the craving. And the awareness of the craving, as I felt found in that situation, the awareness and the learning about it, that allowed it to release. I didn't make it go away. It went away. So that's the letting go that happens. We don't make the letting go happen. The wisdom and the understanding let go of that wanting. So let's see, there was a question that was typed in. I see I'm just not going to get, let's see. What of using intention? Can mind be wanting, I want intend ease, simplicity, non-attachment? Yes, absolutely. And we've been talking about this. So, you know, there's a difference. So there's a difference between the wanting that's connected with greed and the wanting that is connected with the movement in a wholesome direction. Intention itself, the Pali word for intention, chetana, is a neutral word. It's flavored by whatever's arising with it. And so if that intention is arising in conjunction with greed, it's unwholesome. If that intention is arising in conjunction with wisdom, if that intention is arising in conjunction with love and compassion, which can be what is being pointed to here, you know, the mind can be intending or aiming towards ease. And, you know, what I have been speaking about, may the body relax. That's an intention. That's using a skillful intention to support us. So the a way to frame the difference, though, is that we're not caught by a delusion of belief that a certain kind of effect has to happen. So in setting an intention, may the body relax. When that's done skillfully, when I'm doing it skillfully, you know, may the body relax. Maybe the body doesn't relax. That doesn't mean I get all bent out of shape. It means just like, oh, okay, there's tension. Maybe that needs to be seen. So what's inside the intention, or what's connected to the intention, is crucial here. So the intentions towards wholesome quality, and yet the intention towards wholesome qualities too can be motivated by greed. But you'll notice the pain of that. I mean, how many of you have had the experience of having a lovely sitting, you know, having a very calm, clear sitting, and then a day later or an hour later, sitting down and it's not there, and you're trying to get back to that? You know, it's kind of a wholesome thing that, yeah, many of you, like Steve Armstrong says, nothing like a good sitting to ruin your day. You know, it's because we want it back. And so it's like, you know, while that was happening, it probably wasn't the clinging or craving in there. But, you know, after the fact, later on, we want something we had. And so there's the, you know, the idea of I'm not going to be okay unless I get it. That's a big difference than may the mind have ease. I need that ease. I've got to go back. I'm not doing it right unless I get it. I'm failing somehow. That shows up when the unwholesome motivation is there. So we know the difference between wholesome and unwholesome motivation.